This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Jake Auchincloss is the newest and youngest member of the Massachusetts Congressional Delegation. He represents 4th District, and he's been on the job for about 3.5 weeks. Now, you know that we speak regularly with members of our delegation here on Radio Boston, so we wanted to get to know our newest representative, and he is joining us. And he's going to take some calls. So if you have questions on the stimulus bill, vaccines, the economy, you can call 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Congressman Jake Auchincloss, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
So almost a month now, I'm sure you went into the job eyes wide open, but anytime we start something new, something surprises us. What has been surprising about the job for you?
Quite an orientation, huh? My colleague from New York, Richie Torres, noted that our first Wednesday was an insurrection, our second Wednesday was an impeachment, our third Wednesday was an inauguration, and this is our fourth Wednesday, so I don't know what's going to happen before close of business,
but
it's going to be exciting. I think you're right that I went into it eyes wide open. I was unfortunately not surprised that there was a mob on the Capitol steps. I was unfortunately not surprised that so many of the Republicans in Congress refused to demonstrate moral leadership. I was and remain stunned at the complete failure of Capitol security that allowed for the insurrection to breach Capitol grounds, and there must be accountability about both misconduct as well as potential collusion, no matter how high up it reaches.
So you said you weren't surprised by the mob on the Capitol steps. A lot of people were. So why were you not?
Well, because the former president and his enablers had been telegraphing it on social media for months. They were inciting insurrection openly. They have been blowing on this dog whistle, not even a dog whistle, really now a bullhorn, for years. They have been fomenting this type of white supremacist grievance, and January 6th was clearly going to be the climactic moment.
You know, I want to play some sound. You just talked about a remarkable three Wednesdays, right? I mean, that's incredible. That's got to be a first for somebody just starting in Congress. And on one of those Wednesdays, you gave your first speech on the House floor 2 weeks ago, supporting the second impeachment of then-President Trump. You co-sponsored the resolution to impeach. Here's a little bit of what you said.
Immediate impeachment is our duty under a Constitution that compels us to defend against enemies foreign and domestic. As a Marine officer, I defended our democracy from foreign enemies. As a member of Congress, I am solemnly resolved to defend it from domestic ones.
I am sure as a Marine officer, former Marine, you don't take those words lightly. So who are, in your mind, our domestic enemies?
Well, those who breached the Capitol grounds are a very good exemplar of them. They are those who, one, reject the Constitution as the supreme law of the land and who seek to insert, instead of the rule of law, the rule of demagogues and would-be fascists. And they are, unfortunately, those who are installed in elective office who aided and abetted those insurrectionists, including, unfortunately, members of Congress and even the president himself. There are people who...
So I do want to stop you there for a second, because, I mean, that's a really serious thing you just said. So you believe that there are elected officials in the U.S. Congress who are currently domestic enemies.
People who directly incite political violence are leaving the guardrails of constitutional democracy. I welcome good faith, vigorous debate on all issues. That's what people send us to Congress to do. But we need to have clear red lines as a democracy about what behavior is acceptable and what behavior is not acceptable. And it's not acceptable to cross from debate and even passion, vigorous debate into a directly inciting political violence. And that's what happened.
Are you ready to take a call? There's plenty more for us to talk about, but calls are coming in. Shall we go
sure.
to the phones real quick? So we've got Greg on the line from Duxbury. Greg, go ahead. You are on with Congressman Jake Auchincloss.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I have a question, Congressman. Is there any way of doing a dual-party commission to prove that the election was not stolen? I think if there was actual, I don't know how to say if the right word is proof, but if I thought the election was stolen, I'd be very upset myself. I wouldn't break into the Congress, but I'd be very upset. I don't believe the election's been stolen, but I think there has to be a way, if it was a bipartisan commission, to prove it. I think, you know, it might quell some bad feelings.
Thanks for the call, Greg.
Here's the approach I would take to that, is that actually a bipartisan commission to investigate, that what that implies is that there are facts in question. There actually really are not facts in question. Numerous courts of law and many elected officials, including many Republicans at the state level, have said repeatedly in multiple forums that this was a free and fair election. I mean, we have now vetted this election more thoroughly than any election in the history of the United States. And repeatedly what has come back is that not only was this free and fair, but by many metrics, this was one of the freest and fairest ever. What we need is not a commission. What we need is Republican leadership in this country to demonstrate the moral leadership of saying to their base, this president was lying to you. This was an election that represented the will of the people. And in democracies, we accept defeat and we work in good faith with the incoming administration, like I will say Senator Mitt Romney did, to his credit.
So I'm just going to put the number back out so callers can call in if they also have questions. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to move on to some specific policy areas. But before we do, just the last question on this broader subject. So today, the Department of Homeland Security issued a bulletin warning of a, quote, heightened threat environment, unquote, in the wake of the insurrection, the inauguration. You know, so there is business to be done in this new Congress on urgent, immediate issues, the pandemic, our suffering economy. At the same time, there's real business at hand in effectively handling these threats, addressing the concerns you just raised about colleagues in Congress. I mean, that's going to affect our ability to work. Impeachment of the president, of the former president of the United States. Can Congress do it all?
Yes. And I think Americans absolutely should hold Congress to account for both holding a president to account for unlawful actions, as well as governing in the midst of crisis. American families, people in the Massachusetts 4th, have been juggling just unimaginable responsibilities and obligations over the last year. Asking Congress to do both its constitutional job and its governing job at the same time is not unreasonable.
So let's talk about some of that work. One of the biggest things on the table right now is more economic relief, pandemic relief, financial relief. One of the hot button issues is this issue of payments to families, whether it's low income families or a broader set of families. $600 payments were sent out this month to qualifying Americans. President Biden has proposed $1,400. But there are lawmakers saying that's too much, and there are others saying it's not enough. We spoke with your colleague, Ayanna Pressley, on Friday. She wants $2,000 recurring cash payments. Where is the number for you, and is it the number you think we can get to in Congress to put that money in people's hands?
So I broadly support President Biden's approach here. And what I am concerned about is getting a number that we get passed as quickly as possible, because the need is acute and urgent. And we don't want to let perfect be the enemy of the good. Let's get cash into people's pockets, especially lower income families who are really struggling right now with a host of obligations. And let's also, and this to me is just as important, get relief to state and local governments. Local governments, especially the 34 in my city, in my district, are going to face a fiscal year coming up that will present really impossible trade-offs between public safety, education, human and social services, and painful cuts are coming if we don't provide relief. So let's get something across the finish line and get money into government and people's pockets.
What are the other big needs for the 4th this year in your mind?
It begins with COVID, as it must everywhere in the country. And there are really two elements of that I'm focused on. The first, and this is obviously quite salient today, is we've got to vaccinate more people faster. There are then two elements of that. One is sort of the logistics, the signups, the sites, the number of people to do it. It's been a little rocky at the beginning of that, but ultimately, actually, I'm less concerned about the logistics, which I'm confident the state can handle, than I am about the supply. We can have the best logistics distribution system in the world, but if we don't have the supply, it's moot. And the supply is not big enough. We're getting about 85,000 a week. That might go up to north of 100,000 in February. Back of the napkin math will tell anybody who's listening that that's just not enough, not fast enough to get this state where it needs to be. And so we have got to
do.
We've got to do a host of things. So Johnson & Johnson's approval is going to go a long way. They're saying they can bring a billion doses this year, and those are single doses. So that's going to be incredibly important. We can use the Defense Production Act to boost the supply of the non actual biomedical elements like the syringes and the plastics. That will help. And then just having competent government at the federal level in the White House goes a long way. I mean, the Trump administration left a complete shambles behind, and just having people who are invested in actually doing this the right way and having science and public health be in the driver's seat is going to be an enormous issue. I just want to quickly touch on, though, that the second big aspect of this, there's vaccinations, more people faster, but then there's also testing. And I've really made testing, especially for public schools in the district, the flagship issue for me in the first couple of months since the election. We are going to need robust testing infrastructure for our public schools, I believe, for at least the next 18 months. And that means every public school should have access to free weekly surveillance testing of all teachers, staff, students, and getting that in place.
You mean like pooled testing, yes?
Exactly. That's really going to be the enabler for full in-person learning, which to me is an issue with both moral and economic dimensions.
And how soon do you think we could be back into full in-person learning?
That's really predicated on how soon we can scale up surveillance COVID testing. And that's underway right now. DESE, the state agency for education, has launched a program to do surveillance testing for public schools for 6 weeks. And I've been very involved in making sure that the school districts in my district are signed up for that and set up for success. But it needs to be, I mean, it needed to be happening a while ago, but it definitely needs to be happening now.
And just for listeners' sake, pooled testing is a group of people swab. The tests are processed together. If something in the pool comes up positive, then they go back and do individual testing to figure out who it was. How about another call, Congressman? Are you ready for one more?
Yes.
Okay, we've got Kyle on the line from Waltham. Kyle, go ahead.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call. Congressman, I wanted to ask you what your thoughts were on the Electoral College. At the risk of sounding like I'm complaining, I know that Democrats have kind of taken it on the chin twice in the past two decades. I don't consider myself a Democrat. I am a bleeding heart liberal. I'm a big Bernie supporter. And I don't feel like my vote is necessarily being heard in Massachusetts. So I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on the Electoral College and if you think it should be abolished or if you.
I think we lost Kyle at the end there, but I'll turn it back over to you, Congressman.
Maybe an unusual thing for a politician to say, but the truth is I'm really still debating this issue. I have a great amount of respect and deference for the Constitution, and there's a high bar for me always to change elements of our politics that have been with us since the founding, because it's served us well as a country overall. However, it does feel like this is really not working anymore. 7 million votes separated Joe Biden and Donald Trump, but he just squeaked by in terms of the electoral votes he needed. If you look at the actual state counts, we're getting to a place where we may be undermining the democratic legitimacy of our national elections. And we need to go in eyes wide open to abolishing the Electoral College, because that will have some downstream effects that could make campaigns more expensive. For example, it could change the way that campaigns are run in ways that may not be as inclusive. So we need to understand the ramifications here, but this is an issue I'm actively wrestling with, and I'm trying to read and canvas opinion far and wide on it.
All right, so we've got limited time left. I want to go back to vaccines for a minute. We were talking about it before the call. You made a sort of an oblique reference to the challenges being experienced by people today trying to register for vaccinations. We're going to cover that after the break. But I did want to ask you, are you hearing from constituents today? And if so, what are you hearing?
Yes, I am hearing from constituents, and I'm hearing that it's frustrating, and I'm hearing that people's patience is running out, and I share that conviction. We need to have a logistics and distribution system in place that is robust enough to handle millions of these. I have confidence that we will. And the bottleneck that I am most concerned about is supply, because that is going to be the one that ultimately is the constraining factor here.
And so you're satisfied. I mean, we're hearing a lot of complaints today about the way the Commonwealth has stood up registration processes and distribution processes. You are satisfied with the way the Commonwealth's handling that now?
No, I don't think anybody who has participated in today's signups is satisfied. What I am saying is that when I look at the issues that are going to be the defining constraints for getting this population vaccinated in the next 6 months, I am much more concerned about supply than I am about logistics, because logistics, we are going to sort it out, and we're going to sort it out sooner rather than later. Supply is the one that is going to require really intentional work, because those issues are months long in the making and fixing.
All right, that is Jake Auchincloss, who represents Massachusetts' 4th Congressional District, newest member of our delegation. Great to have you, start to get to know you. I hope you'll come back again soon.
Much more, I hope.
Thanks.